Canadian Broadcasting Corporation presents the last of a five-part series based on Pierre Burton's book, Klondike. Prepared for radio by Bill Fraser. Produced and directed by Fred D.L. With original music composed and conducted by Tommy Banks. And starring the author himself as our host and guide, writer, broadcaster, Pierre Burton.
The Klondike Gold Rush was a curious mixture of the sacred and the profane, the heroic and the demonic. All of its major figures seem to be larger than life. The rogues and the villains are of the deepest dye. The saints and the heroes, on the other hand, are almost too good to be true. The Great Stampede did that to men. It brought out the best, or it brought out the worst. There didn't seem to be any middle ground.
Klondike by Pierre Burton. Part 5, The Glitter Turns to Tarnish.
All right, you Rocky Mountain sportsmen, belly up to the bar. Usual, Gertie.
Fine, thanks.
What'll you have, Mac? Coming right up.
Don't go away. I'll be right back.
Don't worry. I'll be right here. Hurry back, Gertie. Hey, Martha. Here's a couple of bucks.
Right away.
In Dawson, the gold was changing hands. On the creeks, thousands of men were tearing it out of the ground and in a kind of frenzy, rushing into town to spend it. And so the gold slipped from hand to hand as if it was red hot. Poured into Dawson in shiny streams, in greasy pokes of moose hide or in 100-pound sacks strapped to the backs of mules. It was sprayed under the bars of the Front Street saloons, shoveled into the purses of the dance hall girls, or flung carelessly onto the gaming tables. The very air glittered with it.
Not bad, Gert. How you doing?
I got a live one. The boys?
Yeah, the suckers are really biting tonight. The poor ginks have just got a spend it.
They're all scared they'll die before they get it out of the ground.
Hey, look, there's Vaseline and Glycerine hustling that Irishman again tonight.
Wonder how long it'll take them to clean him out.
Not long at the rate he's going.
It's kind of nice to have a sister to work the suckers with.
Yeah, keeps it in the family.
All right, you surly bunch of sourdoughs. Pick your partners for a long and lively polka.
Guess I better get back to Loverboy before some other game lasts off.
He ain't picked clean yet, but I'm working on it.
I'll bet you are.
Dawson ran on gold. So did its people. Because of gold, they destroyed the countryside, turning the lovely valleys into deserts of bleak gravel. Because of gold, they faced typhoid, malaria, frostbite, and scurvy. The steaming, undrained swamp on which the boomtown rested, rank with undisposed sewage, spread disease. The sick, jammed into St. Mary's Hospital, using every available cot, filling the hallways, and even crowding the Jesuit missionary in charge, Father William Judge, the Saint of Dawson, as they call him, out of his own Spartan bedroom.
Marguerite?
Yes, Father.
Sister, do you know who left these blankets?
Blankets, Father?
Yes, three bundles. Here, at the door.
Well, I have no idea, Father. They weren't there a few moments ago.
Strange.
A very timely gift, I must say. At least now we have something to cover those 20 patients you admitted earlier today.
It's a miracle, sister. The Lord has answered our prayers. It is wonderful.
Yes, Father. And we'll need them. Why you would take in more patients than we can accommodate is beyond me. Would you have even given up your own bed?
Sister Marguerite, you sometimes lack faith. It's a miracle, I tell you. See, the blankets are here.
More likely some Klondike king's conscience was bothering him after squandering a fortune on those wicked women in those terrible saloons.
Does it matter where God performs his miracles? Not only do you lack faith in the Lord, sister, but sometimes you show so little for his children, your fellow man.
If the Lord is able to touch the conscience of these people, then it will indeed be a miracle.
Sister Marguerite, you are tired.
Sorry, Father, but I must speak out. Right here, in this hospital, while you deny yourself the basic necessities of life, even your own bed, our male nurses and staff members are robbing us blind, borrowing money from dying patients, knowing they won't have to pay it back, sending their watches out for repair, hoping to claim them when the owner dies, drinking the brandy and the whiskey meant for typhoid patients, then claiming it is not time for their medicine.
Sister, it is enough. You have no proof of this.
I'm sorry, Father.
You've been working far too hard. You.
Oh, excuse me, Father Judge.
Come in, George, come in. Mrs. Farmer, nice to see you.
Sister Marguerite?
Mr. Noble, Mrs. Farmer.
Father Judge, we represent the Benefit Committee.
Benefit Committee?
Yes, Father. The people of Dawson are organizing a hospital benefit show on Christmas night. We hope to make enough to take care of at least some of the hospital debts.
We've got a wonderful minstrel show lined up, Father. And miracle of miracles, Joe Cooper has offered us his Tivoli Theater free. Never thought Joe would do that. The best paying night of the year.
Well, I see.
The people are kind of hoping that you'll be there as our guest of honor, so to speak.
Guest of honor? Oh, I don't think that's necessary. But certainly I'll be there.
Oh, fine. And the people of Dawson would also like you to accept this suit, sealskin coat, cap, and gloves as sort of a Christmas present from all of us. We appreciate how much you do for Dawson.
Oh, I am sorry, Mrs. Farmer. That is very good of everyone. But as I told the tailor you sent around the other day for my measurements, as a Jesuit priest, I can neither own chattels nor accept gifts. I am sorry.
But, Father, couldn't you make one exception? You only have your black cassock, and it's almost worn out.
I am terribly sorry, but I cannot accept it. You know that, sister.
The people of Dawson will be disappointed, Father. It's not the fact they figured you needed some warm clothes for this country.
I am grateful for the gesture, of course, but I cannot accept.
We understand, Father Judge, but the only thing is, most of the donations for these clothes came from the Protestants of Dawson. It's going to be hard to explain to them.
Protestant donors, you say? Oh, that will be difficult to explain, Mrs. Farmer. We wouldn't want to be accused of exhibiting religious intolerance. I'm sure I don't know what you can say to them.
Please take them, Father Judge, and happy Christmas.
Well, in this case, I suppose it is the lesser of two evils. Thank you.
We'll expect you on Christmas night then, Father, as our guest of honor.
I'll be there. Thank you.
So long for now, then.
Goodbye, Father. Sister.
Mrs. Farmer.
Goodbye.
See you at the benefit.
A hospital benefit.
Well, I'd better get these blankets unpacked and the beds made up for those new patients. So much to do, and I can do so little. God gives me strength, but for how much longer, I do not know.
I'll look after the blankets and the beds, Father. Please go and take some rest. You don't look well at all. And you must be fit for Christmas night.
Perhaps I will. Thank you, Sister Marguerite.
And Father?
Yes?
Please forgive me for doubting your miracles.
Ladies and gentlemen, people of Dawson City, I'm glad you're enjoying the show. And there's more to come. But right now, Well, I'm sure you all know why we're here tonight.
Yeah.
To honor a man who is far better than any of us. I see you all agree. I know I don't need to tell you how much he's done for this community. Working day and night, serving us all, rich or poor, regardless of our race and religion. And I know you hope, as I do, that the proceeds from this show will help in some small way to pay off some of the hospital debts and to make life a little easier for the conscience of the Klondike, that grand old man of Dawson, Father William Judge.
Standing ovation for Father William Judge in the Tivoli Theater, Dawson City, Christmas night, 1898, lasted a full 5 minutes. And that was the only time he ever appeared in his new clothes. The following day, he was seen once again wearing his threadbare cassock. In the gaming rooms, the gold never stopped circulating. After all, the whole stampede itself had been an enormous gamble. Men who'd struggled through 2 winters to wrest the gold from the ground thought nothing of tossing it all away casually on the turn of a single card. One game could cost a player between $50,000 or $75,000. And yet, although they treated the gold offhandedly as if it were so much sand, the stampeders were always ready to look for more. The slightest whisper of a new find could send hundreds of them trudging up and down the river or across the hills in the bitterest weather, and often on a wild goose chase.
Hey, Shijarko, there's Nihilim and Skip Mitchell over there in front of the Aurora Saloon. Come on, I want to see them.
Nigger Jim, they're both white, Charlie.
Oh, and he's the whitest looking of the two. The big blonde.
Well, then why do they call him Nigger Jim?
Wait till you hear him speak. He's from Missouri, and he sounds like he ought to be singing colored spirituals. How you doing, Jim? Skip?
How's the nigger, Charlie?
You fellows know Shijarko here?
Howdy.
Andy Austin? Oh, this is Skip Mitchell.
Hello, Andy.
And Jim Doherty.
Howdy.
Doherty? Jim has got so much gold he doesn't know what to do with it.
Oh, the Oatley sisters helped me get rid of a lot of it.
Yeah.
Hey, but since I bought the 2 saloons, I get lots of the pleasure money back myself.
Oh, you got it made, Jim. Mine the gold from the ground and take it out of the miners in the saloons.
Yeah.
Say, that for some benefit the town had for Father Judge.
And no more than he deserved.
Amen.
That's right.
What we'd do around here without him, I don't know.
Well, we may soon find out. He doesn't look good at all. He's in bed with pneumonia, I hear. Somehow I don't think he's going to make it.
He'll pull through.
Yeah, yeah. I always feel he's like the town conscience, the good side. Mm. You look at him and you feel a lot better.
That's right.
You remember that you belong to the same race. Mm. Every man in this world isn't trying to beat his neighbor.
I guess we all feel that way, Charlie.
Mm. Well, this has sure turned into a gloomy conversation. Well, I know it's too bad that their father's sick, but moaning won't help.
I suppose.
Well, I doubt he's water's too anyway.
Yeah, you're right. Say, there hasn't been any new strikes in his area lately. I wonder if the boom is running out.
You know, I've been wondering the same thing myself.
Hmm?
Get the kind of feeling I had just before 40 Mile and Circle City turned into ghost town.
Well, are you saying you think Dawson could become a ghost town?
Overnight.
Oh, that's crazy. It's one of the biggest cities in the whole Northwest.
Canada or the United States.
It could vanish in a flash. It's happened to many a mining town.
Then let's give it a shot in the arm.
What do you mean, Jim?
Oh, Chichaco. Bob Crandall at the Nugget. Is getting some figures for me. How'd you like to run over and pick them up?
Sure.
Well, you might have to wait a minute. Here's $25. You can have a few while you're waiting.
Wow. Sure thing, Mr. Doherty. See you later.
What's on your mind, Jim?
Yeah.
I've been thinking things are getting too dull around here.
Huh?
I figure that it might be a little fun to start a stampede.
Stampede?
It just liven up the action.
You lost me, Jim. How are you going to start a stampede?
I suppose when we plan a story.
Yeah?
You can plan it with the Checo when it gets back. That I have a map showing a creek where there's been a big new discovery.
Checo would never tell anyone.
You hell, they wouldn't. Try and keep a secret in this town.
All right. Yeah. Count me in on the prank.
Yeah.
Go.
Hear about the new strike?
Strike? Where?
A creek. Go. Up the river somewhere. Nigger Jim knows.
Yeah, Nigger Jim.
That's so.
Yeah, they tell me the old boy had a poke of dust.
Go.
By God, I'm going to get in on this one.
Go.
Hey, you heard Snowshoe saying, what is that?
Green picking.
So, can't find a gold pan, pick or shovel anywhere.
Coffee.
Oh, you know where I can get some
snow?
About the snow?
Flour.
Green for anything.
I need that gold pan.
Hey, man, you made some flour.
Right. How about the...
You fellas got the Yukon stoves, tents, and robes all packed?
All set.
They'll be enclosed like a Roman gentleman's.
Yeah. You're going to need them this 6 to below weather. All right. Let's go.
Bizarre incidents that illuminate the Klondike saga, the Nigger Jim stampede is the most grotesque. When Jim swallowed his 8th whiskey and soda in the Aurora Saloon at 11 p.m. on January 10, 1899, and joined the newly harnessed dog teams waiting along Front Street, half the town was in on the secret. 50 sleds picked up his trail along the frozen Yukon River. Behind those sleds came more struggling figures, muffled the eyebrows in the bitter 60 below weather. It was as if these men were bent on reenacting for themselves the full drama of 98. Because, you know, the Nigger Jim stampede, with its wild rumors, its sudden frenzy, its optimism and despair, its trials and its yearnings, and its ultimate irony, was a scale model of the gold rush itself. For all but the unanointed few, it was a horror. For they went totally unprepared, in the worst cold of the winter, struggling up a miniature Chilkoot Pass in search of a treasure that did not exist. Some bore the scars of this stampede all of their lives, hideously maimed by frostbite and privation. And meanwhile, in the hospital under the hill, the saint of Dawson clung precariously to life. While in the dance halls along Front Street, the Nigger Jim stampede took its place on the stage as another Klondike legend.
Just yet, they mention a goal. Drink up, everybody! All me!
Count me out, Jim. I think I'll go over to the hospital and see how far the judge is getting along.
All right, Skip. Say, Say hello for me, will you?
I sure will.
And me.
You bet.
I hope you won't stay long, Mr. Mitchell.
I won't, sister.
He's very low. I don't think he has much longer. Oh, this way.
Thank you.
We're so very busy right now. Many who went on that stampede were in bad condition when they returned. Terrible hoax. It may have been very funny for some, but not to these people in here. Frostbite, exposure. I understand that you went well prepared.
We were lucky, I guess.
Father Judge is in here.
Thank you, sister.
Remember, not too long.
Certainly. Hello, Father. How are you feeling?
I'm afraid my work here is done.
Oh, it can't be.
Are you crying?
Oh, we've been friends ever since I came into the country.
That's no reason for sorrow, is it?
We can't afford to lose old friends like you.
You've got what you came for. I, too, have been working for a reward. Would you keep me from it?
You sound anxious to die, old friend.
The decision isn't mine.
I'm not a Catholic, as you know, Father. But I'll pray for you.
You may do what you please, but I am going to die. Pray for my soul, my friend. My body is finished.
Mr. Mitchell, come along now, please. He's terribly weak and terribly tired.
Certainly, sister.
He lies in there dying, while the town is in the dance halls and saloons celebrating. No, I'm not as good a person as Father Judge. I can't see good where he can. All I can see is that this country and the wicked people in it killed him. And I can't see that any of you are worth it.
Sister, you may not believe it, but right this minute, I can't either. But I think somehow his life has been worthwhile. After this madness is over, many people will be a little better for having known him.
I trust you are right, Mr. Mitchell. I pray to God you are. Otherwise, there isn't much sense in anything, is there?
Dawson lasted as a metropolis for exactly 12 months, from July 1898 to July 1899. Before that, it was nothing more than a huddle of shacks and tents, and after that, it subsided into a ghost town. Already, there were rumors of another, richer strike far down the Yukon River, almost 2,000 miles away, on Norton Sound. No one knew for sure whether these rumors were true, but that really did not matter. The human leakage had begun.
Jim, I just heard. Dead.
Thank God. If the whole town slipped into the river, it couldn't be more of a shock. He bought the $1,000 casket. I think it's only right he's buried decently.
Days to hack a grave out of that frozen ground.
Things seem to be changing here. I have a funny feeling the boom's about over.
Oh, then news from Norton Sound seems good. If it's confirmed, there'll be a re-exodus. Just like when the Klondike strike emptied Circle City in 40 Mile.
Harry, set us up a couple more.
Coming right up.
It sure is quiet in here, even for this time of the morning.
Ah, yes, it's hard to believe, really. I mean, all this could vanish, you know.
I found it hard to believe Father Judge could die.
Mm-hmm.
Not until I saw them lower that casket into the ground.
Yeah, that was sure some casket.
Like everything else here, the best money can buy. But I doubt if all this wealth will do most of us any more good than that casket did Father Judge.
You said that at the time of the funeral, Skiff. Why?
If you don't know Charlie, you never knew Father Judge. And you don't know what's really wrong with Dawson City.
Listen, who's talking about what's wrong with Dawson City? You ain't any different from any of us.
Not a damn bit better. And the thought of that scares hell out of me.
A few weeks after Father Judge's death, the town experienced its own inferno. A tongue of flame burst from the bedroom of a dance hall girl. And within minutes, the entire center of the city was in flames. There was no way to stop it. The water froze in the hoses before it reached the nozzles. And as the expanding ice tore them into shreds, a moan of despair escaped from the crowd, who realized the city was doomed. Half freezing, half roasting, they stood like lost souls on the edge of the pit, their faces glowing redly in the reflected light of the vagrant flames. Before their eyes, Dance Hall Row, with all its memories, crumbled away and was gone. The fire is so hot that nuggets, gold dust, gamblers, jewels, stick pins, watches, bracelets, and the diamonds of dance hall queens, all kept for safekeeping in the bank safe, were fused inseparably into a molten mass.
Hi, Flossie. You heading downriver, too?
Heading to Nome, dearie. That's where the action's going. 8,000 people left here last week. No percentage for a working girl staying when the money's leaving.
My sentiments, exactly. And we won't have to get to know a new bunch of suckers. All the old ones will be where we're going.
The town was rebuilt, but it was never again the same. The news from the golden sands of Nome was confirmed by midsummer. In a single week, in August of 1899, 8,000 people left Dawson City forever. No more multitudes had arrived. The word Klondike had lost its magic. In the outside world, it had suddenly become an epithet of contempt and derision. Too many men had returned with tales of heartache and frustration. And yet some men stayed on, not for the gold, but simply because they had learned to love the wilderness and freedom of the land itself. These were men who had learned the real lessons of the stampede. Not the gold at all that they were seeking, so it turned out, but themselves. They learned a lot about themselves in those chill slopes and in those frothing river rapids. And what they learned gave them a contentment and a stability far more valuable than the false treasures of Bonanza and El Dorado. My father was one of these men. He spent 40 years in the Klondike. He found no gold, but he never regretted a single instant.
Klondike. Part 5, with Pierre Burton. Prepared for radio by Bill Fraser. Original music composed and conducted by Tommy Banks. Christopher Newton was heard as Father Judge, Ted Stidder as Nigger Jim, Marie Hotans as Sister Marguerite, and Essa W. Young as Charlie Anderson. This program was made available to this station through the facilities of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.